Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Helge. As usual, that was beautiful. The words are very important. And happy Sabbath to all of you as well. Well, last month that we just exited, was this an exciting month or what? Right? The anticipation of a people celebrating and preparing was every day. And it built and built. There were those that dreaded the day. Pagan, they shouted. This day is a pagan day. It should not be celebrated in any way, sense, or shape. It's rooted in superstition. No, no, others said, nonsense. Through the darkness, a new light, a new beginning. I got to be honest with you. Just being honest. I find the day fascinating. I look forward to it in certain ways. I really do. It's a special time, and it only happens once a year. I mean, really. This year, it was December 21st in the Northern Hemisphere at approximately 7 a.m. What am I speaking about? That's right, the solstice. The solstice is an interesting time of year. There's nothing pagan about it. It is an astronomical phenomenon, and it has happened for thousands of years. The solstice. It's an astronomical phenomenon, and it's described, and I checked with one of our resident scientists, it is one of Kepler's laws of gravitation and orbital dynamics. It's one of four times during the year in the Earth's cycle that it makes a change. And I'm sorry to give you so much detail, but I think I'm going to build to a point and a reason behind all this, I promise. We'll get somewhere. One of four times. In the Northern Hemisphere, it is what is it the most, does anybody know? In the Northern Hemisphere, it is the shortest day of the year. In Australia, or Southern Hemisphere, it's their longest day. We're celebrating winter. What do they celebrate? What season do they celebrate right now? Do you know why? Because the Earth is messed up. It's got a tilt to it. On December 22nd at 2 a.m., the Earth makes a 365-day and a partial journey across what's known as the ecliptic, an oval, not a circle. Again, not a perfect oval. As the Earth makes its journey through along this elliptic, two solstices in the, what seasons, anybody remember? Two solstices in the winter and summer, very good. And two equinoxes. Solstice, by the way, means it's Latin for solstices, which means sun stand or sun stop. And it actually stops and reverses in that direction, but in length of day. Equinoxes are spring and fall. Equinox means equal night. That is the time when it's not the shortest day or the longest day, it is equal day and equal night. And these are four points along the cycle or the circuit. The word that is used, that is referenced repeatedly in the calendar literature in Hebrew, is the tekufa. And there's a lot of argument about it. It's a very simple word. It's in Exodus 34, verse 22. But I want you to turn with me, if you would, if you ever thought I wasn't going to get to the Bible, to Psalm 119. Excuse me, Psalm 19. Sorry. Psalm 119, beginning in verse 1. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day utters speech. And this is very, you can tell this is very poetic. This is not a physics or an astronomy text. This is poetry. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. They're silent. They move. We cannot hear the moon. We cannot hear the sun, but we can see them. Their words are the end of the world. In them he has set a tabernacle for the sun, which is like a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoices like a strong man to run its race. In rising is from one end of heaven, and its circuit, there's the word tekufa, in the other end, and there is nothing hidden from its heat. It's beautiful language. The heavens declare the glory of God. What he has created represents his creation, and it's important. But the earth goes around this circuit. It's a little irregular. Again, it's not circular, it's elliptic. But this is the point of demarcation. It's regular, and it never, ever ends. The tekufa, that it became, just so you know, when you read it and someone says it means equinox or solstice, that is incorrect. Those are rabbinic terms that occurred, just for the record, centuries later. They do not mean equinox or solstice, but the word circuit. And it, again, it occurs with that kind of detail and definition much, much, much later as keys along the points of the circuit. And those points do exist four times, two solstices and two equinoxes. Further, the length it takes to circle the sun is not perfect. It's not 365. It's not 360. It's 365 and a quarter. That's why we have what kind of year? That's why if you get married on February 29th, I know of one couple that was married on February 29th, or someone has a birthday, they're in their 60s, but they've only celebrated their birthday four times. Let me explain why. No, because February only shows up every fourth year, 16 times. And so these things are irregular, they're not perfect, but they still are important for calendrical calculations. The moon in its orbit is not regular, it is irregular. We call it the sidereal month. It is 27 days, 27 days. It is 29 and a half days for it to complete its phase. From one new moon to another is approximately 29 and a half. That's why in the Hebrew calendar, the months are usually 29 or 30, 29, 30. Which averages what? 29 and a half. Why is this important? Because God has given us a regular, pretty accurate clock or timekeeper in the sky. It reminds us of creation and a loving, caring creator. It's interesting, the last few weeks, the messages that the speakers have been given, and I had this subject many, many, many weeks ago, but it was interesting about Mr. Budge and the review of Charlie Kirk's book on the Sabbath, and Mr. Fish used it in side references about time, information, and how we manage the things that we've been given. And I think there's been a theme. So today I'd like to discuss with you, I think, an incredibly important concept that God reminds us often, and in fact, we as human beings are obsessed with this, as I will prove. We are obsessed with it. Do you know what it is? Time. We are obsessed with time. So the title of this message is, It's About Time. I couldn't resist. Just as we use clocks to measure time and keep appointments, so it is with God's measuring of time by his celestial clock. Again, it is approximate. It is not pinpoint accurate, but it gives humans on the earth a great idea of what is going on the earth based on the sun, the moon, and stars in his celestial clock. Turn with me, if you would, to Genesis chapter 1, verses you obviously we're all very familiar with. In Genesis 1:1, we know this so well. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He created the heavens and the earth. This is not a physics text. It is a summary, a guideline, a description, poetic, very poetic in some cases. In chapter 1, verse 10, it picks up the theme. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together the waters he called the sea, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the earth bring forth grass and herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree, and the yields that fruits according to its kind, and the seed in itself and the earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass and herb that yields seed according to its kind. There's no specificity here. It's generalities, and it should be taken that way. And the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the first day. Verse 14. Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night. Let them be for signs and seasons, for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth. And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. Bada bing, bada boom. What's interesting about these verses, it is not a scientific analytical text. It is commentary. It's a story. It's true. But there are very, very few details that he gives us. The lights in the heavens, the stars, it's not really not detailed. They have objectives. There are reasons that he gave us these things. Yeah, they're pretty. Yeah, they give us an understanding of God's creation and the glory that is associated with it. But there are objectives that he had. Number one, to divide the night from the day. The Hebrew is Layla. Very simple. And Yom. Yom means what in Hebrew? Day. Yom. Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement, the Day of Covering. Those are very simple words. The signs and the wonders. For seasons. It's kind of an odd term. It's what's called the Moedim or the Moedem. An appointed time. Something important where there is maybe a meeting. That's what the Old Testament connotation is. The days, it's to level off days. Again, the word Yom. And the word year is used. Year is Shana. Where have we heard the word Shana? Rosh Hashanah. It is the head Hashanah of the year. Shana. These are all very simple, very easily explained. He says there are lights that are greater and lesser. They're not named, not here. What are those greater and lesser lights? The sun and the moon. The sun is in the daytime, and the moon is in the nighttime, which is, this is an interesting time of year. Around dusk, a little bit before, maybe an hour or two, you know what you can see if you look in the eastern sky? What can you see? The moon. It's because the sun is not quite down. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Two great lights, but the terms, they give no detail. There are no set instructions. Don't let anybody tell you there are set instructions to construct a calendar. This isn't enough. It just isn't. There's no way to construct a calendar here. Not at all. There's no numbers. Could it be lunar? Could be. Could it be solar? Could be. Could it be lunisolar? Yes, it could be. Where the moon dominates, or solar lunar, where the sun dominates. All of those are possibilities. The Jews picked a lunisolar calendar, and you may not like this, but the Egyptians and the Chaldeans, the Sumerians and the Babylonians had it as well, because it's astronomical. It is not religious. There is only a certain number of possibilities. The Jewish calendar, as you may know, requires an insertion of a 13th month occasionally every 2 to 3 years to keep it in regular concurrence with the solar year. The Jewish calendar can be 353 all the way to 385 days, a full month in addition when those months are added. That's why we find some of the holy days are a month later, especially in the fall. They're a month later because there's been an insertion of a month. And I'm sorry to give you all this detail. Does anybody know what the Muslim calendar is? It's lunar. Their holy days, Ramadan, floats throughout the year. The Jewish calendar cannot allow that. But calendars are not religious. The thing that you have on your wall is not religious. It's astronomical. It's based on the sun and the moon. Strictly astronomical. The days, however, inside of a calendar, those can be religious. Those can be very religious, the days within them, or they have religious meaning. Once a calendar is established, whatever they pick, whether it's solar, lunar, or lunisolar, once a calendar is established, the days are inserted. For instance, in the Jewish calendar, what does it tell us? The first day of the first month, the 14th day of the first month, the 7th day of the 7th month, the 14th day, it does it numerically. And that's how the biblical parlance, it's all numerical. To be very clear, when you think of calendar, think we're talking astronomy. Astronomy, its origin is from the Greek astronomia. The word Greek for star is astron. Astro, not the dog, the star. And nomos, what is the word in Greek for nomos? Law. This is the law of the stars, the rule. It means the science of organizing and understanding the laws governing the universe. It is not astrology. Astrology comes from astron, star, and logia, the study of the stars, and means basically the study, the telling, the interpretation of the stars that have supposed influence on your life. That's astrology. Calendars are not astrological. They are astronomical. Why is this important? Because our lives are dependent on time. Our lives are surrounded by the measurement of time. It's about time. In a recent Torah.com article entitled The Genesis of Time, Professor Jack M. Sasson of Vanderbilt University wrote this, quote, "The simple meaning of Genesis 1 through 2, verse 4, is that God created the world out of primordial elements. And yet, one important new initiative was the construction of time, embracing the day, the month, the year, and the week. The week, however, does not, listen to this carefully, The weak, however, he says, does not depend on a cosmic phenomenon, but serve to introduce the concept of a people holy to a creator God. The Bible further elaborates on this interesting aspect of Genesis and the concept of time. Turn with me, if you would, to the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, one you are very familiar with. They'd make a good song, these verses. Maybe you'll agree. By the way, is the clock busted here? It says I haven't started. It's okay. I put my watch here so I can keep the time. Chapter 3, verse 1. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. The word season there is a very unique word in the Hebrew. The word time is very, very common. So there is a season, an era, an appointed time, a duration, and a time for every purpose under heaven. And I'm just going to read it because it flows so well with very little commentary. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up. And you'll notice that there's a cadence to it. There's also a grouping of events that are very similar if you look at it carefully. We won't take the time to do that. It's a great point of study if you have time later. A time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. Would make a good song, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? For those of you that are under 105, there was a song named this by, who is the group, do you remember? The Birds, that's right. The Birds, of all the interesting names, the Birds. To everything there is a season, zaman, a season, an appointed time. It's used only four times in the entire Old Testament. A time, eth, is the predominant term. It's used hundreds of times. There's something for every purpose. And as we read through those, I will guarantee you, as my mind did, you thought of different events that you'd experienced. Maybe in the last year, maybe in the last five. It's important to remember these things. We go through these seasons. We go through these times. Each and every one of us can relate to each and every one of these points in the book of Ecclesiastes. Then he adds something very interesting in this chapter in verses 9 and 10. What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task which with the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. God tries to give us an answer and an understanding for every one of these times that we read in our lives and the lives of the ones that we love. Also, it says, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. The last section is true. We have no idea what God's individual day is like. We can guess, we can speculate, but we don't know. It is a mystery. But he has put this thing called eternity, timelessness, somewhere deep inside of human beings. Eternity. There's a part of us that wants to live forever, maybe not in this life, but in another life, forever and ever and ever. Let's look at time as an absolute concept, or an abstract concept, sorry. As mentioned, we are obsessed with the culture of time. Think not, I want you to be honest with me because we're going to take inventory. Please be fair, please be honest, either with a nod, a raise of the hand, or just, you know, that you know what I'm talking about. How many of you have a watch on your wrist? Ooh, oh, I see that hand. Most of you have a watch on your wrist. How many of you have a very special watch on your wrist that means a great deal to you? A few of you. I do. I have a watch that my wife and I gave each other watches for an anniversary. It's a very special watch. How many of you have a pocket watch? Not here, but at home. I do. I know some of those hands better go up because, yeah, that's better. Yeah. Have pocket watches. How many of you have more than 5 watches? Whoa, look at the hands go up. How many have more than 10? How many of you are seeing a counselor? No, some. It's not always guys, but usually guys get obsessed with watches. Is there a clock on your phone? Yes, there is. On every phone? On every phone, there is a clock. And some have two time zones. My phone will handle 2 phones, 2 time zones. When I was back east and I had Asia under my jurisdiction, I literally had a face watch, this is 25 years ago, that had 2 time zones on it. Because when they called me, I had to know what time it was. It usually was 3 in the morning, my time. It was a completely different time for them. There's a clock on your phone. There's possibly, how many of you have at least 1 alarm on your phone? Ooh. How many of you have more than 1 alarm on your phone? Ooh, interesting. There's a clock here in this room. I just referenced it and it's busted. I'm serious. It's 3:05. Can we synchronize watches? I have about 20 of. Is that about right? It's approximate. See how important this is? It isn't accurate. I can look at my phone. It's 3:34. Does that make good? Good. 3:34.
You got to be so accurate.
There's a clock in this room. It's ignored by most speakers, not some speakers that speak here, but that's okay. That's another side issue. There's a clock in your car's dash. How many of you have 2 on your dash? Somewhere on your dash you have 2 clocks. Mine does. Yep, a few of you do. You have 2 clocks on your dash. At home, this is where it's going to get ugly. There's probably a clock on your mantle. How many of you have a clock on your mantle? A few of you. That's why it's called a mantle clock, because it's on the mantle. Is there a clock on your VCR? How many of you have a VCR? This ought to really date. Yeah, a few of you do, yeah. For those of you under a certain age, it's a video cassette recorder. There's a clock on your VCR. On your DVD player, is there a clock? On your TV, is there a clock? Heads are nodding. You've given up raising your hands anymore. This is embarrassing. Is there a clock on your microwave? Yes, there is. Yes, there is. Is there one on the stove? Yes, there is. Is there a timer on your stove? Yes, there is. Is there one in the hall? Some of you, yes. Some of you, no. Is there a clock by your bed? How many of you have on either side, those of you that have, married, hopefully married, have a clock on each side? We do, and they're usually the same time. Not always, but most of the time. Is there a phone on your computer? Is there a clock on your computer? Yes, there is. Is there one on your tablet, your laptop, or your laptops? Yes, there is. There's clocks on all of them. How about the calendars? How many calendars have you had in your house? How many have got at least 2 calendars pinned somewhere on there? Yeah, some of you have resorted now to nodding so nobody will see your hand go up. How about possibly in the garage, the den? We are obsessed with time as a culture. Think not? Yeah, right. We are obsessed with time. We're obsessed with marking it, looking at it, trying to control it. The question is, can we control the time? You've got so many gadgets to do it. Can we control time? Can we bring it to heel? Nobel physicist Richard Feynman of Caltech, who is deceased, said of time from a near atheistic material perspective, and this is an approximate quote because I tried to predictive AI this and it was very difficult, but this is the essence of his quote. Quote, time does not flow. Time doesn't push you anywhere. And if you think you have a good grip on how time works just because you can count the seconds in your head, you're in for a very rude awakening. Let's start with what goes on inside your brain, because that is where the confusion begins. You think your internal clock is a reliable instrument. It is not. It is barely approximate. It is a chaotic mess. This quote is very famous of Feynman. You may have heard it. Quote, the first principle is that you must not fool yourself, and you are the easiest person to fool. Unquote. I think Dr. Feynman, may he rest in peace, is right about the last quote. I think he's somewhat wrong about time on the second, because there is one aspect of time that is singularly and explicitly controlled. It is exact. It is immovable. It is unchangeable. Every clock you can change. Every watch you can change. Every clock and watch you have, this aspect of time will never change because it has never changed. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 2, if you would, please. In Genesis chapter 2, we'll pick it up in verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done. And he rested the seventh day from all his work which he had done. We are so familiar with these verses. We should be experts in this. Some of us have been keeping it all our lives, this concept of a seventh day. He rested all that he had done. He rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day, and he sanctified it. He made it holy, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. This is a singular historical event. It is immovable. I want you to remember the quote we made from Torah.com. Quote, "The week, however, does not depend on a cosmic phenomenon, but serve to introduce the concept of a people holy to a creator God." The seventh-day Sabbath cannot be reordered. It cannot be redefined. It cannot be added to or subtracted from mathematically, astronomically, literarily, in any way, shape, or form. It cannot change. It is irresolute because it is expertly, divinely crafted, and as we just read, defined. There have been, no doubt, attempts to change the week. How many of you are familiar with ISO? Are you familiar with the International Organization for Standardization? ISO rules govern much of the world's business. It's a worldwide organization. It is decreed in the 1970s, I think in maybe early 80s, that uses Monday as the first day of the week in its ISO week date system, 8601, for those who want to reference ISO 8601 standard. Most of the countries around the world have changed to their calendars, and they begin with what day? Monday. How many of you know this because of the countries you visited? You probably didn't notice it. It starts on Monday. There are some exceptions, and these exceptions are interesting because most changed to Monday 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Interestingly, all of North America, Canada, the United States, and Mexico, all stuck with what day as the beginning? Sunday. They didn't change. Most of South America, portions of the UK, and very interestingly, the nation of Israel did not change to Monday. Google it. Check it out. Prove me wrong. All maintain the historical Sunday to Saturday week. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. The Sabbath is the seventh day of the week beginning on a Sunday. And it was that way for thousands and thousands of years. It cannot be changed. It is regular, foundational, and it is God-given. And God gave the Sabbath for a very specific reason. Turn with me, if you would, to the book of Mark, all the way in the New Testament. Mark chapter 2, please. In Mark chapter 2, in verse 28, we're going to pick it up kind of out of context. If you have a red-letter Bible, this is in bright, big, bold, and beautiful red. Jesus said at the end of this story, which we'll refer to in a minute, he said, "Therefore," and this is what's important, "the Son of Man," Jesus referred to himself exclusively as the Son of Man. No one else called him the Son of Man. When you see that, he's 99.9% of the time on the lips of Jesus himself. It's a self-description. He said, "Therefore, the Son of Man," in other words, him, moi, "is also Lord of the Sabbath." He is the master of the Sabbath. I believe he was at Sinai with Moses giving the law of the Sabbath. I think he was there as God's agent. He is the Lord of the Sabbath. He controls the Sabbath. It cannot change. He is not the Lord, he says, of Monday or Sunday or Wednesday or Friday, but of the Sabbath. The declaration that Jesus makes that the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath appears in all three synoptic gospels, in Matthew 12, Mark, as we read in chapter 2, and Luke chapter 6. John, the Apostle John, obviously didn't get the memo. He wasn't using the same manuscripts. But the context of the declaration, that the statement that he made was made after the Pharisees accused the disciples of breaking the law by plucking and eating grain. They accused him of harvesting as they walked through the fields on the Sabbath. What was in fact interesting as well is that Mark alone has this addendum in verse 27. So we're going to back up to verse 27. It says, "And he, Jesus, said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." This is profound. The intent, the objective, the reason for creation of the Sabbath was for man. Now, God may have rested on that day, completed his work on that day, but in reality, it was created for mankind. The Sabbath was created for you and me and everyone who will accept it. Mark chapter 3 has some interesting points in the Sabbath. Verse 1, chapter 3, verse 1. "And he," Jesus, "entered the synagogue again." Remember the place setting, synagogue. "And a man was there who had a withered hand. So they watched him closely," the Pharisees did. "Would he heal on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him? And he said to the man who had the withered hand, 'Step forward.' And he said to them, can you imagine, just, he asked the man with the withered hand to come forward. Then he turns to address another group of people, the Pharisees. "Is it lawful," he says, "on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they kept silent. And as we know, the story goes, he healed the man on the Sabbath. He asked the question, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" This is so important that the Sabbath was meant for good things, not evil things. To save life, to not kill. If those of you that are familiar with Dr. Samuel Bakayoko in his book, Divine Rest for Human Restlessness, he gives the impression, and I think he does a good job of proving it, Jesus seemed to wait for the Sabbath, not to tick off the Pharisees, but to heal people on the Sabbath, to release them from the bondage of their infirmities. He waited for the Sabbath to do good because the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Jesus clearly says and tells us that the Sabbath was made for us. Again, he does not do this to tick off the Pharisees, but to heal, to do good. It's also, as many of you may know, it's one of the driving forces of the Seventh-day Adventists of why they built hospitals, their own hospitals. How many of you have been to an Adventist hospital? Quite a few of you. If you remember when we attended the Merton Seventh-day Adventist Church back in the day, there was a hospital not too far, which was an Adventist, and fortunately or unfortunately, it was close. Many members were taken there for different health services. So do good things. I would ask you, I say to myself and to you all, do good things on the Sabbath. Pray to God for guidance, and do not ask a Pharisee. They don't know. Let's conclude. Life and the time that it occupies is indeed, I think, a strange taskmaster. We lose time, we lose track of time, we misplace time, we miscount time often. It just happens. How and where is the question, do we spend our time? On my phone, I brought this up at the feast. How many were at the feast in Temecula? Quite a few. You're going to hear this twice. I'm really sorry because it made such a profound. I have this app on my phone. It's called Health and Wellness. Health and Wellness. It's an aptly named app. I got it out. What it does is it calculates every website, and none. I don't go on bad websites. I don't think I do. Hope I don't. Pray I don't. It calculates every website, every app function, everything about my phone, on my phone, where I have spent time each day. It is embarrassing. I've spent an hour on this stupid thing today, but today's a good day. Yesterday, I was on for 4 hours and 40 minutes. Doing what? I was on Chrome, ESPN, UCG.org. What was I doing on that? UPN, I just, you've heard the phrase from Mr. Budge and you heard it in the first message. It's about time. It's about scrolling, also known as doom scrolling. Absolute, positive waste of time. It didn't exist 5 years ago, 10 years ago, but we made it an art form in 2026. It is a pointless use of time. The Sabbath is the perfect reminder that we have to regulate time, to establish short-term goals. We know that when we try and do goals monthly, quarterly, annually, three-year plan, those of you that are familiar with business planning, they get wonky and crazy and more approximate the further out you get. Try and plan for a month, but a week is manageable. It allows us to establish short-term goals, to order and prioritize time, to regulate your entire week. The anticipation of the Sabbath should indeed ask us to get it done before the Sabbath, because if you don't get it done, I don't know about you, but with me, I think about it into the Sabbath, what I didn't get done, because I probably didn't write it down, but I should have. So it helps us to establish and prioritize. Thinking and planning, hopefully, at least for us, it creates a stress-free Sabbath. My wife, Becky, for many years, has always treated the Sabbath, Friday night, very special. I know many of you do because I've talked to you. Friday night, wherever you spend it, with whom you ever spend it, is very, very special. There's this group of people who, both men and women in this congregation, to send each other regular happy Sabbath texts to start the Sabbath off. And I know everybody appreciates those that did get them. But when I was work, I'm retired now. When I came home many nights after putting out fires all day long, all week long, I did set a few fires. Well before the Sabbath, however. But after putting out these fires at work, I came home to a house often full of candles. Not a religious issue, they weren't devotional candles, but Becky had lit these little candles throughout the downstairs of the house. It was very special. It wasn't like a church, and that wasn't the objective. It was to provide a sense of calm, of no stress. The work week is over. And it did, it ruined. And I know many of you do same or similar again because I've talked to you about it, because it works. It's very important. A few final points. Our family has for many, many years, since I was a child, has used telescopes. And we've got 4 or 5 telescopes. They're hard to set up, but they were so important and gave us such a wonder and hopeful expectation of the heavens, the moon, the stars, the planets. I don't use them so much more. We had all kinds of reflectors, reflection, and even a Schmidt-Cassegrain. How many of you have got a pair of binoculars? Most of you do. Excellent, excellent source. I would also suggest possibly to you for this reason something, an app called SkyMap. How many of you are familiar with SkyMap? Oh, I'm surprised. Good. Is it excellent or what? Talk to somebody who has it. It will show you every celestial object in the sky, both above you and underneath in the southern hemisphere. It is fantastic. But I would also ask you just simply, occasionally, just go out and look up. A little difficult right now, obviously, with the rain. Just go out and look up at the night sky. Notice the moon, where the stars are, where the sun sets, the arc of the sun. Observe these, the sun, the moon, the stars, as they appear throughout the year. It's important. Watch the sun in relationship to the seasons and stars and how the sun moves as the seasons go by. God created that. And it also, as we obviously know, we of all people, should know that this regulates the holy days and to a lesser degree, not exactly, because it's set in stone, it sets the weekly Sabbath. Brethren, the Sabbath, the high days, the heavens that we see around us were made for you.